welcome to Wednesday evening and Behind the Mic Radio. I am your host, Dawn Mack, and so very glad to be here with you on Hump Day and Juneteenth, as I've been seeing on social media all throughout the day today. And for those of you who are celebrating Juneteenth, I hope you've had a great day. And it has been a great day. It's finally summertime. It's not incredibly hot. I don't know what it is, but it's just been wonderful here in the Carolinas. And so I hope it has been where you are too. Today has just been a magnificent day. We're so excited to have our guests with us tonight, and they're going to be calling in the next few moments. We should be hearing from them. It has just been a phenomenal day, and we're so very excited about who our guest is. To give you a little bit of background on her, our special guest this evening is an NAACP Theater Award-winning actress. She is two-time nominated author for the book Jokes My Father Never Taught Me, Life, Love, and Loss with Richard Pryor. She is an acclaimed singer, stand-up comedian, acclaimed director, and producer. She is currently starring off-Broadway in her critically acclaimed Fried Chicken and Lycus, an effervescent solo show which recounts her upbringing in a biracial household. We are proud to welcome Rain Pryor. Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Hi.
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Hi.
Hi, and welcome. Welcome. Thank you so much for being here this evening.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Well, it is indeed an honor, and I have been, you know, hearing so many good things from your publicist to seeing stuff online about this show. I mean, my gosh, I want to congratulate you, first of all, right out of the gate on the huge success of Fried Chicken and Lycus. I mean, my
Thank
goodness,
you.
That is just phenomenal. So, you know, it's really a great play, and I can't wait to see it because I'm actually looking forward to it. I know you're going to be in my neck of the woods later on this summer, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But one of the things I want to ask you is, when you
yes.
first wrote this play, did you ever envision that it would be as well received as it has been?
Not at all. Not at all. I really wrote, when I first wrote Fried Chicken and Lycus, I actually wrote it just to do something. Like, I had no, and I also thought I wrote a drama. When I first did it and people laughed, I got offended. And then I realized, I wrote a comedy. My life is hilarious to people. And so it's kind of,
Hello? I think we may have lost Rain. I think she was driving. I could tell she was driving.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, you're here. Okay. I thought I lost you for a moment. And
I know.
The call had disconnected.
My whole life is interviews from my car. I'm just letting you know.
Oh, gosh.
That. I'm either driving to and from New York to Baltimore, back to New York, and that's where I'm on my way now, so I'm so sorry.
Oh, it's okay. It's perfectly fine. I was afraid that somehow the call had disconnected and it was on our end, so I was looking and I still saw you in the switchboard, but I didn't hear you, so our apologies as well, but not a problem. So we were talking about, you know, the success of Fried Chicken and Lycus, and I know that a lot of people out there who have not seen the show but have heard about the show, talk a little bit about it and what it's all about.
Well, Fried Chicken and Lycus is about growing up being Black and Jewish and the issues of race that were very prevalent in the late 60s, 70s, and 80s. And then it goes into talking about a little bit about my life now, but it's really about the relationship and stereotypes that exist in both those cultures. And it's a way so it's not, even though it's my life, it's not really, I should say, it's not singled out specifically to my life, because you can relate to it no matter who you are. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, I don't think everyone had a white Jewish mom who thought she was a black militant for a mother, but I think they can relate to the fact that she was a very powerful presence in my life. For those
oh, yeah.
who have those really strong, opinionated kind of moms, you know, like she didn't mess around. I got in trouble, and you see that. Like, you know, there's a point in the show where the younger version of myself is wearing clothes that are inappropriate, and my mom's like, "You're going to go upstairs and change," you know. And we have a fight, and we have a fight about it. You know,
yeah.
So it's like I think it's more of a human story, but it deals with the subject of race, and that's something that was important to me to talk about.
Oh yeah, and I'm so glad that someone has done something like this, because you know, even now in this day and time, it's a conversation that's needed, I think. And this really,
yeah.
I believe, this play is a great platform for opening up that dialogue, don't you think?
You know, I have noticed that it has been. I mean, I got, you know, I've had great opportunities to speak to different groups. And my favorite is when I have an audience that is black and Jewish, and I get to talk about that relationship and the need to work on the communication, because there's so much that those two races have in common, but yet we still fight, and it makes no sense to me. You know,
oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
show,
I know.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say that, you know, the fact that, you know, now it's kind of a unifier in a way. I mean, I would think that this show allows that to become that, because there's still so much, you know, lack of communication, and it really, I think, could help bridge some gaps there.
Yeah, you know, and especially in this, look, we are in the age where we have a black president, and I say it in my show, as much as we move forward, we also move backwards. And I like, and it is a conversation that I think we need to have. It's like everyone thinks we're over race, but we're not. We just kind of cover it up, and we say derogatory things in a different way now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
mm-hmm.
so it is something that's very real and tangible. You know, and I'm one of those, like, until you understand the history, we can't get through it. It's not something
yeah.
that you can put on a back burner and go, okay, we're over it. It's not like a fight you have with a friend. It's something.
Mm-hmm.
It's really an internal fight that, you know, our grandparents have had when they first came to this country. You know, it's a fight that our children have in school. It's a fight within our communities. So it's bigger than I am, if that makes any sense, which is why
mm-hmm.
it's about me, but it's not about me.
Right, right. It is kind of a twofold, two-dimensional thing, because when you think about it, you know, we're all human beings. And it really doesn't matter what color someone's skin is. I mean, that is such an irrelevant thing when it comes to the person and who they are.
Yes.
You know, but people, unfortunately, tend to make it about that. And it really, that has absolutely, should have absolutely nothing to do with it whatsoever.
Right.
But this play, I think, is just brilliant. And you're to be commended, because I really think it will help as the play continues to, you know, travel and be in lots of theaters across this country. I'm thinking it's going to break down some barriers and some walls. People who go out and see it, because I don't see how it couldn't open people's minds up to a different way of thinking about this sort of thing. You know, whether it be biracial or just racial issues in general. You know,
right.
You know. I mean, because at the end of the day, it really is about respect of one another, and at respect knows no color. I mean, respect is respect, and
exactly.
and that's what we should always try to put forth. You know, well, one of the things that I was curious about is, were any of your experiences growing up, were they somewhat of the inspiration behind Fried Chicken and Latkes, or was all of your experiences?
Yes. In this show, I mean, I'm sharing my experiences. I'm sharing, you know, I share with you my grandmother, who felt at the time, you know, my Jewish grandmother, she grew up in a generation of the Jewish people that escaped from Nazi Germany and Poland.
And so when they first got to America, their whole idea was to hold on to their culture and their way, and then my mom had to go marry a black man. And it's a threat to the culture. It was a threat to, what does that mean? We were already exterminated for being who we are. Now you're bringing something else into it. And so you get to kind of hear her perspective on that. And then, you know, then I talk about the fact that, you know, I had crosses burned on my front lawn when I was a kid. I had the N-word painted on the side of our home in Beverly Hills, you know.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, and that was because that was the era. It's like nowadays you probably wouldn't see that unless you go like deep into a culture that's stuck in time somewhere, you know. But so I do tap on those things that are, everything is exactly from my life. Like, I didn't make something up, but the thing is, it's a more universal perspective than it is, feel sorry for me because I grew up this way. Like, I don't like to do that. You know, I think you learn from your experiences, and hopefully you grow from them. You know, like, you don't stay stuck.
Yeah, that would be quite tragic if we did stay stuck, you know. I mean, otherwise, it's all part of the journey called life, you know, for us to have these experiences, to hopefully grow from them. And this play, to me, just sounds like it is steeped full of not only your history of growing up, but just history in general of where this country was back in that era to where it is today. And, you know, and it's just, like I said, I keep using the word brilliant, but it's brilliant the way you've kind of brought this forward. Yet you've intertwined the thoughts and the mindset of yesterday, you know, into it, and which in some respects still exists today in some circles. And you know, I think I would love to see a day when this sort of thing did not exist and it was non-existent, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and I address that in my show too, you know, I talk about that I because I have a little girl and she's 5 years old, and, you know, I want her to be able to walk down the street and we don't look at each other as black and white, gay or straight, Jew, Christian, Muslim, but we see each other as human beings that we are, where I can look at someone in their eye and say, I actually see who you are, you know, and not judge someone based on some preconception or something that was taught to me as a child about who they're supposed to be. You know, the biggest thing I love is that I have the most blended family. I have, you know, of course I have Jewish people in my family. I have Muslims in my family. I have Christians in my family. I have, you know, this and that, gay, straight, black, white, you know, I have everything. And so I think for me, I got to live around different cultures and learn about them. So that I have an appreciation rather than like a fear, you know, and I get to hear different perspectives on why people see things as they see them. And I think that helps you to grow as a human being. I mean, that's what education is about. That's what culture is about. We're supposed to learn from each other, not be afraid of one another.
Exactly, exactly. So well said. Now, in the play, you portray your dad. Who, as many people know, was the iconic, legendary comedian Richard Pryor. And I understand you really love playing him. And what was that something that you set out to do from the beginning, or did it just kind of come about as the play evolved?
You know, not at all. I was actually approached by the actress Nora Dunn, who used to be on Saturday Night Live and has done lots of movies. And she came to see my show, and we became friends. And she said, Rain, I think what's missing from your show is your dad. She was like, I think you need to do your dad. And I was like, I don't think I can. I'm a girl. And she was like, trust me. And so I went and I started to watch video clips of him and performances of him, and I would try to mimic and impersonate. And one day it kind of just started to all come together for me. And I was like, let me experiment with it. So I put it in one of the shows I was performing in just to see what would happen. And the audience reaction, like, all you could hear was, oh, and I went, oh, my God, like, okay, maybe I was on to, like, it was weird to me. So I was like, maybe I'm on to something here with it. And then what I love most of all, I think, is because my dad is no longer with us, I get to bring him back for the people who really loved and admired him. and it gives me a chance to also be with him, if that makes sense. And so it's a nice, it's always a nice moment because I feel like I get to have my dad with me while I'm on the stage.
Oh, yeah.
And the audience gets to be with him and know him as a dad, not just a year prior, but they get to know him like, oh, he was a dad.
Mm-hmm.
He was a human being that had children. And it's like, oh, and he was strict. What?
Well, and that kind of leads me to my next question of what are some of your fondest memories of your dad?
You know, my greatest, my dad took me fishing. We would, he taught me how to ride a moped. He was a hands-on dad, and that's what was really cool. And yeah, you know, I say it in my show, because of drugs, he was also hands-off. So I got to live with two different Richards. You know, I had the messed up Richard, and then I had the most wonderful, awesome, I'm a dad who came to every single school show I've ever done. You know?
Oh, wow.
And you know, I, that's what I hold on to. You know, our parents are not, our parents are not perfect. Even if we say they're perfect, they're really not. You know, they drive us crazy. They do things that embarrass us. And my parent happened to be in the public eye, you know, and so there were no secrets. You know, everyone knew what he was up to. And so,
well, and
so, you know.
Well, you know, one of the things with your dad, I mean, he was such an iconic comedic character, the character when he was on stage. And he would just command a whole room's attention, you know, whether it was performing in front of 30,000 or 3,000, you know, and without fail. And he had legions of fans then, still has to this day. And what do you think, you know, he being Richard Pryor, what do you think may have been one of the biggest misconceptions about him? Because, you know, as you're talking about him, I mean, you're talking about a man who was a father who loved his children and was devoted.
Yeah.
And, you know, but like every other parent, myself included, he had flaws. You know, there's, I don't care how many books they write about parenting, until you have your own child and you go through that walk, the books won't tell you anything. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. They don't.
Yeah.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think the misconception people have is that he was this genius drug addict, you know, that he was this famous person that had this tremendous career and just was a drug addict. And that's not true. My dad was, you know, he was an incredible father when he was there and he was present. And me and my brothers and sisters have had magical moments with him, that he was so generous. You know, my dad gave money to people on the street, and I don't mean just like homeless people. My dad, you know, there were kids that didn't have any Christmas in this part of an island that we used to live on in Hawaii, in Hana Maui. And my dad went and he bought every single kid, and I'm talking, there must have been hundreds of kids presents that year. And, you know, and he gave the school money so it could rebuild, and he did things in Los Angeles in the same way. He gave schools money so, you know, and at a time there wasn't social media, so nobody knew about the things he was doing. My dad was incredibly generous and also very shy. And, but you know, he was so shy that someone walked up to him, thought he was Bill Cosby, and my dad didn't want to tell the guy because the guy was so excited that he wasn't. So my dad signed the autograph as Bill Cosby.
That is so cool.
And we laughed so hard afterwards, my dad and I, like, we just cracked up. You know, because my dad goes, I just didn't have the heart to tell him.
Well, you know, at least the person had your dad in the right category. Like, you know, Bill Cosby, comedian, your dad, a comedian, two different styles of comedian, of course, but, you know, a comedian, no less, and you just missed it by a little bit, don't you think?
That's hilarious.
Well, that story about him, that just warms my heart. You know, those are the things, like you say, you know, had there been social media back in the day, I mean, there are so many things that we would have known that we didn't know, but it's just nice to know that, you know, I love hearing somebody who has made it and has really, you know, done well, and they give back like that. It's just always so precious, especially when it's to kids in particular, and they recognize people that are less fortunate than them. It's awesome, and your dad, he was an awesome person. One of the things I was curious about, your play, Fried Chicken and Latkes, is, I know it's so close to your heart, and undoubtedly it's been a tremendous personal journey for you, but how would you say that this play has changed or impacted you?
You know, it's changed in many ways because I think that the time that I started to do, I put the play to bed after my dad passed away. So I had about 6 years away from it, 6, 7 years, and took it out after 7 years and started to rewrite and started to even talk about him in a different way and talk about his death. Because I think in families, that's another subject we don't really talk about. And so in that perspective, it changed. And I think the audiences react to it differently now because we are in a different climate racially than we were 10, 11, 12 years ago when I first wrote the play. So it's, you know, and also so when I first started doing the show, it was mainly a lot of music and me talking. So it was more cabaret style. And now I have some music in it, but it's more theatrical.
Well, what is something you would want people to take away from seeing the play?
I want them to take away a sense that of ownness for who they are. And for their ability to evoke change by their actions, that they have the power to be able to do that in their lives and in the people around them, and that maybe we don't judge each other so harshly.
And, you know, and I think if more people could do that, Rain, I honestly think if people could believe in themselves and believe in their abilities, I think it would lessen the blow to how we treat one another, you know, from time to time, or how we stereotype people and we look at others. You know, it's just something about an inner confidence with believing in yourself that just does wonders on so many levels, you know. And it's very obvious to me that your play is more than just about your backstory, your life, you know, your upbringing. It's about so many different things that are necessary platforms that people need to be talking about. You know, and we're at a time where talking about this is a lot more open and accepted than it used to be, which is good, you know.
Right.
And I think as long as we keep talking, we have a great hope for trying to overcome those stigmas and things that people tend to have, you know, when it comes
absolutely
to this issue.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's the key. Mm-hmm. Now I want to kind of touch on your career a little bit because, gosh, you have done a little bit of everything. I mean, you're a singer, a comedian, a producer, a writer, director, actor. I mean, the list goes on and on. Which aspect of your career have you enjoyed the most?
Oh, wow. That's where it's hard. You know, because when I'm directing, I love directing. I love working with actors. I love creating pictures. When I'm producing, you know, I don't think I like producing that much. I do it, but I don't think I like it.
Yeah.
But I think directing, it's between directing and performing. Like, I really, when I'm performing, I love it. When I'm not performing, I kind of go, I love directing. You know, but so I think it just shifts for me depending on what it is. I mean, I think I feel safe sometimes not being on the stage. It's like it's fun to be behind the work, behind the curtain, creating something than it is to actually be on the stage doing it. But once I'm doing it, I also love it. So I think that it's a combination of the two of those.
Well, you know, you're one of those rare individuals that you've got many different hats to pull from. You know, if you get tired of acting, you can go do something else for a while, you know, in the same arena. And,
a lot of people
can't say that. You know, if they say, oh, I just don't want to go act next week or do this play, but they don't have anything else to fall back on, you do, and that's awesome.
You know what's funny? I think that's why I started my nonprofit in Baltimore, because I was like, I just need something that feels kind of normal. And just so you know, I am one of those. Like, you know, I never stop. Like, I haven't had a vacation in 15 years. I'm constantly I'm constantly working, constantly creating for myself, because you know, I'm one of those, like, you can't wait for someone to do it for you. You kind of have to go out there and make it happen. And it takes a village.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of people along the way that have really helped to shape who I am and how, and my work ethic and how I get to show up. And, you know, it's funny, like, you know, I met Suzanne by producing another show, my publicist. And I just thought she's so lovely and she was so kind. And when we were looking for someone else, I recommended her to the Off-Broadway producers, you know. And I just said, this is the kind of person I want to work with, someone who is full of love, someone who is kind, someone who wants to do a good job. And it's like, that's how I like to work. And I love creating teams around me. Like my producer, Daryl Sledge, he's the same way. I call him like my older brother because he's full of love and he's kindness and he's honest. And it's like, that's what you want to create for yourself, because it's a trickle-down effect. When you're the boss of something, you want to you should create a team that supports who you are, because you're going to get the job done and you're going to get it done to the best of its ability, because, you know what I mean? If that makes sense.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that is the key. I mean, that is the key to, and I will say on that note, Suzanne is phenomenal. I mean, I work with her a lot, and she is, she's one of the, I just told her yesterday, ironically, I said, you know, I wish more publicists were like you. You should go train publicists. You know, she's so good at what she does, but you can definitely tell she does what she loves. She's got a real passion for it. It's not just a job for her. And that's the magical secret. I am really excited to talk about this next thing, because I know that coming up later this summer in the great state of North Carolina, where I reside, in case you couldn't tell by my accent, the National Black Theater Festival is going to be held, and it's going to run from Monday, July 29th through Saturday, August 3rd. And I am thrilled that you are part of this, because I
Thank
am
you.
Going to try to come and see your show. I cannot wait. I need to buy my tickets. I need to go ahead and do that now. But I'm thrilled to pieces. I mean, when Suzanne told me this, I was like, what? Are you kidding me? So talk a little bit about this festival, and how did you get tapped to be part of it?
You know, I always wanted to be a part of this festival, and I just didn't know how. And, you know, then someone said, Rain, you really should be a part, and I think we contacted them. They contacted us, and it was an automatic yes, let's make this work. And, you know, this is the biggest Black theater festival that has, like, the highest standard in what is being put out, and the people that come are amazing. Like, I'm amongst, I would say, some of the, like, what I call super talent in our industry, and I'm honored to even have been asked to be a participant. Like, I'm just like, are you kidding me? Like, and you want me to perform where? Like, I was like, this is great. And so I live, by the way, North Carolina. I've been there a lot. I go there a lot, actually, to speak on multiple sclerosis. And so I feel good when I'm there. So I'm excited to be in a place that I've been before that has always been kind to me as well. And, yes, I'm excited about this festival. It's huge.
Well, I'm excited. I'm very excited that you're going to be here. I mean, this is, you know, and it really, you know, I know you're so humble when you talk about being part of this festival. But honestly, Rain, your show is one of the perfect fits for this festival, because as I was kind of perusing, I mean, I've been looking at this thing for days now, at all the lineup and over the whole week of all the incredible talent they've got coming in for this. And this is a really top-notch event. I mean, North Carolina, it's a great thing to have in North Carolina. I'm so glad it's going to be here, and especially that you are going to be a part of it, because
your show
needs to be a part of it. It's a perfect fit. So I'm so excited. So I'm just, my hardest decision at the moment is deciding which day I'm coming to see you. So
you better come give me a hug and say hello.
I definitely will. I mean, I have to come and say hello to you in person, because, it will seem surreal to me. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you a little backstory. Just last week on the local television station affiliate in the next town over from me, they've already started kind of promoting this. And as the commercial was rolling there, your picture goes across the screen. And my mom is here at my house, and she's like, I said, Mom, I'm interviewing her next week. And she said, really? And it was just like, wow. And just
wow,
all the people that
good.
Are going to be part of this, it's just totally amazing. So it is definitely, it's a great event for our state. And I love the fact, like I said, that you're going to be a part of it and bringing this play, which I think is so important to our culture and to the conversations that need to be had. It's going to be great. So I'm very excited for you, and I wish you all the success with it when you're here
thank
and beyond.
You.
And before I let you go, are you going to taking the play anywhere else besides this festival over the summer?
You know, my show is still running off Broadway in New York, so that's my home. So my show is running off Broadway in New York. I also, if I'm allowed to, I also have another. I have a stand-up comedy show that I actually produce that's going to be in the New York area though, on June 28th, and then. So between that, my child, and North Carolina.
Yeah.
Off Broadway, North Carolina, back to off Broadway. You know, that's where I'm at. Back to Baltimore to be a mommy, and then back to New York.
Well, I can appreciate it. I'm a mom of three, so I know all too well what that busyness is like. That's a side busy job all by itself, you know. So I can appreciate that.
But
two of mine are grown. Well, I have one that's 23, one that's 18, and one that's 15. So they're practically grown, as you know. But still, you know, they're busy, and it's busy for me just trying to keep up with their schedule sometimes. Like, wow.
I bet.
Well, Rain, I don't want to hold you any longer. I have
enjoyed
speaking with you. It's been such a pleasure having you. And just getting to talk with you about your play, Fried Chicken and Latkes, and I wish you the best of success with it. It's just received so much acclaim, and it's no real surprise that it has. So just continued success to you.
Thank you so much. Have a great evening.
All right. We'll see you in August.
Okay. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We have been speaking with Rain Pryor, the daughter of iconic comedian Richard Pryor, and she is just phenomenal. This play that she's written, Fried Chicken and Latkes, is a must-see, and I'm thrilled to pieces when I learned, in case you couldn't tell from my excitement, when I learned that she was actually going to be coming to North Carolina with the North Carolina Black Theater Festival, or the National Black Theater Festival, later this summer. I was ecstatic. So, you know, because North Carolina, we are hit and miss on big events like this. Usually events like this are held in, you know, the really big states, New York, Chicago, California, you know. But when you have an event like this that comes to our state, it's a big deal. And so to have her here after having her on the show tonight, I definitely want to get out to see the show. So I'm looking very forward to that. And I hope that you enjoyed the show tonight. It was just such a pleasure having her. What an honor. And some tremendously wonderful things that she said about her dad, Richard Pryor. I mean, things we never knew. So you can tell that she just really, you know, her dad means the world to her. And so I can't wait to see her portray him in the show. That's going to be awesome. And so that is going to wrap our show for tonight, folks. We have got a real treat coming for you tomorrow night, though. We have a hip-hop violinist. Yeah, who knew, right? Well, this hip-hop violinist is not just any hip-hop violinist. You may have seen him on America's Got Talent. His name is Svet, S-V-E-T, and he performed and competed on there. He's actually going to be right here tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern. We'll be talking with him about his experience and also about his career, his tour, and his new album. So you'll want to join us for that. And then coming on Saturday, we have Andrew Potter, and he is a performer and entertainer, and he will be with us at 5 p.m. Eastern. So hope that you will be around for that as well. And so we just want to thank everyone for being here tonight. To all the new listeners who joined us, if you're a first-timer, thank you and welcome aboard. We hope that you'll be back again real soon. And with that, that's going to wrap our show. So take care all. Have a great night, and we'll see you right back here tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern. Good night.
Thanks for listening to tonight's show. You can connect to Behind the Mic Radio on Twitter at BT Mic Radio and on Facebook at Behind the Mic Radio. Check out our website at BehindTheMicRadio.com. Also, follow us right here on Blog Talk Radio, where you can stay up to date on all upcoming shows. Every episode is available for immediate download upon the conclusion of each broadcast and, as always, on iTunes. Thank you for joining us. Tonight's show has been brought to you by One Taste of Main Street Cake Shop, baked from scratch, custom-made cakes and cupcakes, and you'll be hooked. Every cake is made to order with only the finest and freshest ingredients. This is no ordinary bakery. Cakes are never pre-made. Main Street Cake Shop is in demand, having provided cakes and cupcakes for numerous prestigious events, bridal fairs, and venues. Owned and operated by April Murray, she has garnered many awards for not only her exquisite cake designs, but also for their incredible taste. If you're looking for a cake for any occasion, or cupcakes in a variety of flavors, then Main Street Cake Shop is the place. Visit them on the web at mainstreetcakeshop.com.